It has seduction, revenge, at least one sword fight, and the supernatural. How could it miss? Well, it can't, especially since it has music by Mozart. It's the opera Don Giovanni. I'm Norman Gilliland. This is University of the Air. And with me are two people very much involved with a production of Don Giovanni with the Florentine Opera. And they are the executive director of the Florentine Opera, William Florescu, and then playing the part of Don Alvira is Emily Fons. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for
having us.
Thanks,
Norman. Glad to be back.
Oh, there's so much fun stuff, it's hard to know where to begin.
That's right.
But when you select Don Giovanni for part of a season for the Florentine Opera bill, you know, what do you think of first?
Well, the cast, because it's one of those operas that actually has no minor characters. Every character in it is important.
Doesn't have that big a cast.
It doesn't have that big a cast, but there are no, you know, there's no servant running on saying dinner is served.
there's a servant, but he doesn't say
even that. Mazzetto, who's supposedly the smallest character, has his own aria and is certainly germane to the plot. So it begins and ends with a great cast and a great production and director to lead it. So that's really the guiding force for me when you do this opera.
And do you think these days, in particular, by which I mean, I don't know, the past few decades, do you think, oh, what period should we put it in?
Not really. Well, yes. Back when we originated this particular production, which debuted with us in 2006, we thought of that. But, of course, now I knew what I was doing with it because we already had it. And it's, you know, it's traveled around the country, so it's done very well. But, you know, I'm not against updating, but I like it when it sort of illuminates the story more. But I think Giovanni, and there is a, I don't want to give too much away, but there is one moment of updating in this opera. Otherwise, it lives sort of out of place, a sort of fantastical set, because it is in a lot of ways a fantastical story. But other than that, it's period except for one moment.
And how about what the heck is this anyway? Is it comedy? Is it to be taken seriously? I mean, it has all kinds of ostensibly serious subjects in it. Donna Alvira, for example, I mean, is a victim and trying to prevent others from becoming victims. So how are we to take it out? And how do you suppose they took it in Mozart's time, for that matter?
Well, Emily might have her own take on this, but the answer to your question, from my viewpoint, is yes to all of the above, because it's a Mozart, I think, called it a drama giocoso, which means it's a funny drama. I mean, for lack of a better term, it has elements of that. And directors sometimes play the supernatural, the demonic, more than the comedic. And I think that's really just a point of view. But I think, again, it speaks to the genius of Mozart that I think it works with whatever slant you decide to take on it.
No, I agree. And I think the comedy sometimes comes from the characters taking themselves seriously.
Sure.
You know, so I think that's an important part. But I think Mozart did consider it an opera buffa, and hopefully we will get those laughs because there are a lot of comic elements.
But depth of character in there still?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think it's one of the shames of, like, the Academy Awards that comedy is never
taken seriously.
Taken seriously, I know. But because in some ways to be a great comedian is in some ways harder.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, there's certainly depth of character. Leporello's, I mean, I think every character in the opera has depth, while also being ridiculous and sublime at the same time. If you can, those two things can exist side by side. And Mozart's music, and in all of his operas, and Emily sang a lot of Mozart, I think that those things exist side by side in the same
Definitely.
Characters in the same opera, which I think is what the genius of Mozart really is.
Well, let's just pull this one thread out of it, and that'd be your character, Emily. She is actually part of the backstory before the opera has even started. She is seduced and abandoned by Don Giovanni, a.k.a. Don Juan. But, I mean, is she still a comic character after that?
I mean, I think that in order to be funny, she does, like I said, have to take herself seriously. I think just the manner of her first couple entrances, the rapidity in which they occur and the scenes she walks in on, it's almost situational comedy in a way, you know. But I was thinking about the character a little bit, and just the way her entrances occur and the kind of attitude and intensity, I kind of envision her as Wonder Woman. Like, she comes on the scene already, she's already got a mission.
You
know,
that's
her
true.
Very first entrance is, she, you know exactly what you know what she thinks of Giovanni, and you know what, you know, I'll tear his heart out, you know, if he won't come back. You know, she's already got a mission. But she really quickly inserts herself into everyone else's story as well. Every scene she comes upon, she inserts herself in and kind of says, I'll be there for you. I'll make a plan. I'll save you. I'll, you know, I came just in time to rescue this innocent girl, or, you know.
So in a way, she's the most intense character in it because, I guess, well, she has the longest time to boil up in her plan of vengeance. But also she's on a mission to save these other characters before they get involved with Giovanni.
Right. I believe she wants to save every single character in the piece.
Right.
Yeah.
So she's on a mission. In a way, this story is all about people on a mission. Giovanni seems to have just one mission. I mean, he's pretty straightforward, but he's a real battering ram. I mean, if he can't win the mistress, he'll woo the maid.
Right. Well, and I think it's a pathology with him because he doesn't even wait till he's out of one tight spot to sort of go right back to the same behavior that he's been guilty of, and his poor servant is the person that's left to clean up the mess most of the time. But there's this interesting pathology there that makes him such an interesting character from a psychological standpoint. And but Elvira is right. She's a razor, or laser is the word I really mean, that almost like unlike any other character in the opera, gets it from the word go. And I think she is like, that's a great analogy I never thought about. Wonder Woman, who wants to not only save herself, but everybody else who might be his victim.
And save him in the end, too.
Really?
Until the very last scene.
That's right.
Does she really want to save Don Giovanni?
Yeah, I think she does. I think she really does. I think that's what her final aria is about, you know, that conflict of how do you save everybody when there's clearly someone to blame? You know, where do you put the blame if you don't want to put it on you know, Giovanni?
Well, a good question. Yeah, that's right. And
she's a fixer.
Yeah. Looking for a project. What can I say?
Well, this... this opera has, of course, some of the most famous arias in all of opera in it, and there's one that is sung by Don Giovanni as he's trying to seduce yet another one of his would-be victims.
Yeah, and this duet is also interesting because he – talk about an inappropriate time to try to seduce somebody right around their nuptials, I mean,
yeah,
with
right.
Zerlina. And so,
to get there first.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, it's a little bit – it's not so much – for him, it's, I think, the process more than the end game even. I think he's just – that's how he's built, to seduce. That's what he is.
And in this aria, he's trying to seduce, as you say, somebody just before her wedding. And this is kind of a I want to hold your hand before the Beatles got to it.
It is. And you can, and you know, again, even though Mozart's a pre-romantic composer, you can just hear the insinuation and the way the musical lines are written. It's really pretty amazing.
It's called La Ci Darem La Mano.
La mano.
Well, you can see where Don Giovanni would be so successful if he can sing that well.
That's right.
And how does this play out? Is it tipping too much, Bill and Emily, in terms of this particular seduction? Is this one of those cases where Donna Elvira comes in and intercepts, or how does Zerlina, the intended victim, fare in this exchange?
You're exactly correct. Elvira comes blasting in and says, heaven let me hear what you've just said to this poor innocent girl. I'm in time to save her. And there's usually a laugh there because it's hard to believe that Zerlina is miserable and innocent, you know, usually the way that the end of this duet ends up. And I think Zerlina, you know, being of the peasant class, this opera's full of class distinction,
sure,
you know, in that way, is seduced by not only, you know, the beautiful poetic speech that Giovanni uses, but his station, you know, and Elvira is quite aware of that when she comes in. She sees it all. She knows exactly what he's doing, and she does stop things in their tracks right here.
How does Giovanni get out of that, though? I mean, he can't just brush her off, obviously. She's been effective. Dramatically, how does it work?
Elvira usually grabs Zerlina by the arm and drags her off stage.
That's it? We're going.
Yep, exactly. Kind of like Superman, right?
Just Wonder Woman.
But she sings A Fuggil Traditor, her first aria, before they leave, encouraging Zerlina to learn from the danger and the misfortune that Elvira herself has experienced and not believe the lying lips of this seducer.
And so let's hear that. And
that was a great segue.
I was going to say, it's a great segue to this warning aria from Donna Elvira to Zerlina. Well, that's pretty short warning, but to the point.
To the point.
And effective. That's Donna Elvira warning Zerlina about that seducer, Don Giovanni. You know, you mentioned, Bill, that as we were listening, how much it sounds like Handel. Are there other parts of this opera where we hear Handel coming there? We know Mozart knew the music of Handel, of course.
Yeah, and Emily, having done this opera a number of times, probably can answer this better than me, but that's the one specific point. But one of the things I do think about this opera is that you sort of feel a fulcrum or a tipping point in musical writing, looking backwards and looking forward, because mm-hmm. there's some, what I would say, very romantic, very dense music that looks forward, as well as sort of back to the clarity of, I mean, a lot of this does feel opera seria in terms of structurally, like Handel, but then there's other things like some amazing ensembles, the final sextet, the quartet. So it's, that, I think it's full of a lot of, unlike, say, Figaro, which is one type of style throughout and a brilliant piece. This contains elements of backwards and forwards. It's a little bit like a weird parallel, but a little bit the way Monteverdi does between the Renaissance and the beginning of the Baroque era. I think this Mozart does this looking from the classical ahead to the romantic.
Well, yeah, and I see, I would think the same thing of, say, the 20th piano concerto, that concerto in D minor, which is 18th century, but it's, boy, is it romantic too. And
right.
This is 1787 for the opera, and that would be roughly the same time.
Yeah, so it's just chock full of things that are that I think are both. But to me, this is that one. And again, it's unlike Handel, where through an entire opera seria, the characters express themselves in a consistent way musically throughout. What's fascinating about this is that Elvira, her particular character, is expressed very well through this particular type of writing. I mean, Mozart sort of takes a Chinese restaurant approach to it in terms of using the style that's particularly right for the characters that he's writing for. Mm-hmm. And I think for Elvira, that opera seria style works really well.
It seems to me to have a kind of an unusual structure too, although you correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, it has two acts, but a lot of scenes. Does that affect the kind of the dramatic flow of it, or what is the overall, you think, effect of writing it that way?
I'm not sure. I mean, this is, I think, Emily, having done the opera, I've never been in it, so I can't speak to that. I can talk about it as a listener, but I don't know how it feels as a cast member in that regard.
Well, I mean, I suppose in terms of your character does come and go a lot.
Right.
You know, your own storyline feels maybe a little bit disjunct, but I think from the audience perspective, it doesn't have that feeling or that effect.
I would guess it would tend to move pretty quickly, you know, with relatively short scenes, one after the other like that.
Yeah, I think so.
It's funny structurally. It's a bit like those anthology films like Love Actually, where you have six different
exactly.
stories going, and they drop in on one, and they leave it, and they come back to it and drop in. That happens with Giovanni a little bit.
Except Donna Elvira is constantly imposing herself in all of those scenes.
Yeah, so, I mean, but that's an interesting question I never really thought about. But it certainly feels structurally completely different than, say, like Figaro or even Cosi, which are different animals.
Yeah.
We're going to look further at Mozart's Don Giovanni when we return in a moment. This is University of the Air. I'm Norman Gilliland, back with William Florescu and Emily Fons. William Florescu is the executive director of the Florentine Opera in Milwaukee, and Emily Fons has played the role of Donna Elvira in Don Giovanni, one of the productions of the Florentine Opera. So we're looking at Mozart at this kind of a crucial, critical point in music history. The opera comes out in 1787, and as we've said, it has elements of the 18th century, but also looking forward into the 19th. It's also kind of a hybrid in terms of, is it comedy, is it drama? In fact, it has a kind of a hyphenated subtitle, comedy-drama. and so lots of room for playing the characters one way or the other. Did they always, and this is a question for either one of you, Bill or Emily, does the audience always, do you think, get it in terms of this is supposed to be comic and they catch it, or do they tend to take it seriously when you're trying to get a laugh? Or what's been your experience with the opera as an audience member or a producer?
Well, as an audience member and a person who produces it, I think what's interesting about it, and this is, scoundrels are always a lot of times more interesting than heroes, and you can sort of get caught up short as an audience member because you're really interested in Giovanni, and then you realize, oh my gosh, I really shouldn't be. I need to be more interested in Ottavio and Anna, even though I don't necessarily find them as interesting as Giovanni. So I think you get yourself caught up in it in terms of the interesting storyline of the bad guy.
Yeah, right? Well, same thing happened with Paradise Lost, after
right.
all, you know, same problem.
Yeah.
Your experience?
Well, I would say there are kind of two prongs to it. The one being that I think the De Ponte libretto is in itself, there are a lot of comic elements, and he's kind of a master at that. And I think there's comedy in that, but of course our audiences are reading the translated super titles. So I think we put a lot of faith and trust in whoever's writing those super titles to kind of feel out how they want to play some of the things. And, you know, so I think depending on translation, you can go a little more in the direction of comedy or not.
Yeah, interesting point. But of course, you're not even looking at the super titles.
It's helpful to know what they say, though, as the singer, because then you kind of know what to expect, I think.
And much more important when you're doing something that has comedic elements, and we have a great super title operator when we do things at the Florentine. It's not so important in tragedy, but in things with comedy elements, when the super title hits is important. Because, you don't want to do the
punchline at the wrong point.
Yeah, and so, and how you play it. I haven't been on stage when this happens. If you haven't even done it yet and the audience is laughing, you go. So it's... But on the flip side of this, what super titles have done, if you look at operas like The Barber of Seville or Don Giovanni or Marriage of Figaro, in the days before super titles, when everything was done in the original language in this country, almost all comedy had to be played soupy sales or slapstick wise, because people weren't getting
visual.
The situational comedy. So as singing actors today, you can play much more subtle situational and character-driven comedy than you used to be able to do before people knew what was happening. So there's ups and downsides to it. But I think it's really made something like Figaro become even The Barber of Seville become much more sophisticated, as opposed to like throwing pies in each other's faces, which
exactly.
you used to have to do to make it funny because people didn't know what was being said.
And
right.
it's so hard to sing when you got pie in your face. It's always a risky thing to do in terms of maintaining, the attention span, but we should probably give at least a capsule description of what's going on in this opera, who the players are. There are only just a few of them, and so we can, and they come in pairs pretty much, and so we can kind of describe their situations, and it'll give people a little better handle as to what's actually happening in this opera.
Sure. Mm. Well, the opera starts out with a murder. We have the commendatore, the father of Donna Anna, being murdered in the very first scene.
A sword fight, right?
A duel. We see Giovanni with Donna Anna. Sometimes it's unclear: is she being raped? Is it a seduction? Either way, it goes badly, and her father ends up dead. And so she has a desire for vengeance and justice. And her fiance or boyfriend, depending how you see it, Don Ottavio, is there for her. And they're one of the pairs that you talked about in the couple. So we have in the opera. So we have the Don Anna, Don Ottavio pair looking for vengeance, looking for the murderer, looking for the rapist. You know, they're on their own kind of witch hunt. And then we have Giovanni and his servant Leporello, who appear often together. Giovanni obviously being the Don Juan character, and Leporello being his manservant, who, as you said, cleans up the mess most of the time. And the third pair we have are the peasant couple, Mazzetto and Zerlina, who we meet for the first time on their wedding day. And Zerlina is seduced by Don Giovanni on her wedding day. And so, you know, there's the infighting in that couple, plus also the little bit of desire for vengeance on probably Mazzetto's part as well. And then the sort of standalone character, I guess, is the Donna Elvira, who inserts herself into all these couples and helps them maybe clarify their story, helps point out the wrongs and wants them righted. And all those stories kind of weave together. I would say one of the first moments of unity is this quartet in the first act of Giovanni, Elvira, Don Ottavio, and Don Anna.
And this is where Donna Elvira is trying to make it clear what kind of a guy Giovanni is, and he is saying, well, don't listen to her, she's nuts.
Right, and they don't realize at this moment that he is the murderer of Donna Anna's father. They think he's a friend who will help them find the murderer. So
you got quite a little bit of dramatic contrast going on as this aria quartet takes place in Don Giovanni. What about, staging Mozart, Bill? You know, we have a quartet there. Does Mozart give us any clue as we go along or as we come to this particular piece as to how he wants things to look?
Yeah, I just think in so much of Mozart, but this quartet's a great example of it in terms of how it begins seeming to be like an aria and then it feels like in a quartet and then it sort of deconstructs to like two duets. And as a stage director, I love things like that. And I you notice that when you do Figaro, you notice when you do Così fan tutte. I mean, it's and I get frustrated with directors. I think, you know, you can make two choices with Mozart. You use what he gives you musically and stage it with that, or you make a decision to work diametrically opposed to, which I think is valid also. Where I get frustrated when you see Mozart stage is when they've just ignored it. It's like they haven't made a decision about it at all. They haven't dealt with what Mozart's
you
given you.
See kind of one extreme or the other.
And so, but I think this quartet's a perfect example of how Mozart makes it easy for you to do it because the signposts are they're so beautifully musically. You know, you hear Elvira's agitation written so beautifully in the music. You hear Ottavio and Anna's confusion and and Giovanni's scheming. It's just it's all right there. It's really pretty amazing.
There is some moments of confusion in this opera too. I've noticed that, which can in itself be dramatically effective. But I'm thinking about you know, mad scenes. In a sense, this isn't a mad scene that we just heard. It's somebody saying that somebody else is mad. but how unglued does your character become, Emily, Donna Elvira?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, I don't think she never devolves to the point of a mad scene herself. I mean, right at the point when it could be a mad scene, it's a turning point for her, I think, in her mission of, you know, finding Giovanni, tearing his heart up, painting him as the evil traitor that he is. And right at the point when that could happen, she says she's conflicted because when she sees the dangerous state he's in, she can't help but feel sorry for him and feel for him and love him. You know, so she can't ever quite go the full distance of, you know, the crazy, you know, wronged woman. She can't, you know, stick the rabbit in the pot. It's never going to get to that point. You know, there's something holding her back.
What about the servant, Leporello, who is the henchman in so many of Don Giovanni's exploits? In fact, he has this famous, we're not going to hear it, catalog aria where he goes through this list of conquests of Don Giovanni. They number something more than 2,000,
right,
separated by country.
Yeah, I mean, he's interesting because there's times when he almost seems to have pride in Giovanni's exploits, and then there's times when you feel like he's an indentured servant held against his will, and then you almost feel sometimes that Giovanni has like a supernatural hold on him that he allows himself to be abused to the extent where Giovanni even puts his hat and his cloak on him so that he's impersonating him. And you say, how do you let yourself be abused like this? Yet you can see Giovanni's power over everybody. So Leporello is a very interesting character to play. You know, you could play him just like Dr. Bartolo or something where he's a classic buffo, but I think he's much more nuanced than that. So it's a very, there's a lot of ambiguity there, I think.
Well, because Leporello, of course, has a romantic interest in this opera too. Does he not?
I guess you could say that. I think
that's an. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to answer that exactly, but I'm.
The scene that you're referring to, you know, Giovanni. They overhear Elvira singing, and they make the decision. Well, I guess Giovanni makes the decision that Leporello will go and impersonate him, and just see kind of what happens, and
right.
And Elvira falls for it. I guess I think, you know, it's when you want so badly to hear words from somebody, even if they're coming from somebody else, and maybe she can convince herself that that it's him, or they, you know, it's what she's wanted to hear so badly. But Leporello doesn't not enjoy it, if that makes sense. You know,
sure.
he enjoys very much being with Elvira, and I think part of the catalog aria too is, you know, exposing Giovanni, and, you know, like he says, don't waste your time. You're not the
first.
Yeah,
he says that, but
last.
Is he boasting for Giovanni, or is he warning you know, potential conquest. How do you play that
character?
A little
bit of both.
Yeah, a little bit of both.
I mean, there's a temptation at the end, too. I was thinking of at the end, you know, you've got Ottavio and Anna, even though she's going to go off to mourn for another year. And then you've got Mazzetto and Serlina. The temptation is to, like, try to connect Leporello and Elvira at the end, though it doesn't really happen. But I think Emily's right. He doesn't not enjoy the impersonation scene.
But I guess they are both the truly abandoned ones in the end.
Right.
You know, he says, I'm going to go find a new master, and she says, I'm going to go join the convent.
So. Each of them has their attachment at the end. That's right. Well, as you might expect, I guess, at the end of a comic. Well, I guess it could go in a tragic opera, too. The convent is sometimes, I think, a source of refuge.
Right.
So that could go either way, too. We're going to look further at this ambiguous and delightfully entertaining and beautifully musical opera, Don Giovanni, when we return in a moment. This is University of the Air. I'm Norman Gilliland, back with William Florescu and Emily Fons. William Florescu is the executive director of the Florentine Opera of Milwaukee. Emily Fons associated with the character of Donna Elvira in one of the productions of the Florentine Opera, that is Mozart's Don Giovanni with a libretto by Lorenzo da Ponte. And, you know, when you think about this opera, about this great seducer, more than 2,000 conquests, we are told, by his servant Leporello, when you think about it in this opera, though, he actually doesn't get very far. He's got this great reputation, but there's no closure, is there?
Not that we see.
Uh-huh. How much imagination do you have? Yeah.
I mean, I guess the one marker that he's been somewhat successful is the fact that the Commendatore is driven to fight him in a duel, but again, chivalry being what it was then, protecting his daughter's honor, even the fact that it was attempted. But for all we know, I'm not trying to rewrite the opera, but Leporello's books could be potentially cooked, you know, in terms of there's a bit of braggadocio there. Perhaps.
There's that, but there's, of course, also, again, your role, Emily, of Donna Elvira being the spoiler.
Right, exactly. Interrupting Kao, right? Kind of. At the end of every... But he's almost there, you know. She's there to make sure it doesn't happen.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I hope that phrase shows up in the super titles. But we have an aria here that at least addresses his charisma.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is... I mean, it's a little bit like whenever I've always thought as a director, showing more than one side of a character makes it more interesting, like Olin Blitch and Susanna. If you just play him as unrelievedly evil, he's not as interesting as if you see some of the humanity. And so I think you have to believe, you have to understand why people are attracted to Giovanni. And I think this aria is a good example of that, that he is seductive. You can see some of that there, and I think that's what makes him more interesting.
So should I ask, before we hear it, what he's actually saying in this aria?
Well, it's really very, I mean, come to the window and let me draw you to me. And the mandolin accompaniment it's so simple, yet so...
It's a serenade. He's serenading.
Yeah, I mean, it's just Mozart at its, I mean... For simplicity to be this profound and beautiful, even when it's done by a character who's pretty despicable, the ambiguity of that, I think, is really quite powerful.
And I think it's also special that he's not seducing one of the characters we know. You know, he's just seducing a maid. And, you know, we don't even know really.
Right.
You know, it's not one of the main characters. It just shows that he'll seduce anyone. You know,
someone in a skirt there.
Exactly. Exactly.
Close enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he sounds very sincere, and of course it is a lovely aria, as you would expect from Mozart, even from a character who everybody wants to kill, I think. Is it safe to say that they all want revenge against Don Giovanni in this opera? And and we know that in the case of Donna Elvira, she's talking about ripping his heart out, in effect. And so he's revealing his character, I suppose, slightly more tender side here, slightly more human side, as you say, Bill. But he still has a long way to go, I would think, to be a very sympathetic character in this opera.
Well, I think this is the genius of Mozart. In that moment when Giovanni sings Diviene la finestra, it seems sincere, it feels sincere, and in that moment it is, just like the Count in The Marriage of Figaro when he asks for the pardon of the Countess at the end of the opera. You know he's going to get back to the way he's been the next morning, but in that moment you sort of see the heavens open up in terms of what is possibility. And I think that's what great drama and great music, Mozart, is all about. The heavens are open for a moment, even if you know they're going to be slammed shut. It's worth that moment of seeing them open up like that.
Is there a tipping point in this opera? In a way, there's the tipping point for Donna Elvira has come before the opera even started. She already knows the guy as a rat, and wants to get revenge. And as we have said, goes through all the scenes of this opera trying to thwart him in his efforts to seduce other would-be innocents. But is there a tipping point where whatever residual affection she has for him fades?
I would say there's definitely a point where it comes, where it has to confront reality in a way that she's never really let it before. And that would be right before the aria Mi Tradì, which was added after the Prague premiere, thankfully. We love that aria. It's beautiful. Right before Mi Tradì is the first time that Elvira has to face the fact that not only is Giovanni a seducer, a cheater, a scoundrel, but he's also a murderer. She learns very clearly that he is the one that murdered Donna Anna's father. And she has to deal with that new information in contrast to the fact that she still wants to save him, still wants to fix him, but it's very a different thing to fix a murderer and fix someone who she just thinks was unfaithful. But the very first line of the recitative before that aria is in quali eccessi onumi, what excesses was he really involved? Like, she can't even fathom if where does it stop?
Exactly.
This might be the tip of the iceberg, this new information. And it leads into this aria where, again, as in so many arias, the most important word is ma, but. he's done all these things. He's betrayed me. He's abandoned me. And yet, when I look at him, I feel all these things, and I feel pity, and so she does have to confront those feelings, and in the end she chooses to try one more time, l'ultima prova, her last entrance. I'm gonna give it one more shot,
even after she finds out he's
even
a
after
murderer.
Yeah.
Emily, you mentioned that this is a difficult aria to sing, and it's really easy for us in the audience to think, well, why wasn't it done this way or that way, you know, more dramatically or faster or drawn out more? And there are other considerations, apparently, in terms of just maybe even just getting through the aria at this point in the opera.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and I think, you know, every singer has to make an aria work dramatically for themselves and vocally for themselves. And then, of course, take into consideration things like how long is the show? Where are we time-wise? You know, so, yeah, lots of considerations.
Well, speaking of some of those considerations, now, and you've mentioned a couple times, Bill, and I think you too, Emily, for the Prague performance, this aria was there, but not in subsequent performances. In other words, there are some parts of this opera that are considered as optional.
Yeah, this aria actually was not in the original Prague production, as was the sextet at the end of it was not either, and nor the tenors less well-known aria Dalla Sua Pace, and they were added on. I think most of the time today they are done. Part of the reason is it would, I'm, you know, me hiring Emily to do Elvira would be a much less attractive proposition. I said, we want to have you do this, but you're not doing her signature aria. That becomes a much less popular proposition. So there's that. But I also think it fleshes out the character more.
Sure.
The one choice you could argue is the final sextet is that really sort of blowing a little sunshine into the piece that it really isn't there. That you could make that argument against it, though I don't necessarily buy it. Particularly depending on how you stage it. But you could make that argument, but I don't think you can make an argument that Elvira's just as good without this aria. I think it really helps round her out as a character.
Well, this final sextet, which is, I guess, a little bit controversial to this day. Now, the opera, as we, most of us, remember ending, is very dramatic. The Commendatore, the statue, this ghost comes and drags Don Giovanni to hell with, you know, demons and fire and all that. But then you have this, as you say, kind of sunny little coda at the end of the thing in the form of the sextet. Is it considered anti-dramatic or anticlimactic or what?
Well, it's almost Greek chorus. Like, you almost feel like for the sextet, there should have been a sextet at the beginning that says here, you know, it's sort of like the...
Oh, the commentaries.
Sort of like what is the Aristophanes play where the actors talk to the audience first, because that's sort of what happens at the end of this. And so for some people, it feels a little too neat and tidy. But, you know, I don't feel that strongly about it, but it's a different piece. Seeing him dragged to hell curtain scene is a completely different feel to the end of the opera than the sextet, which sort of, and it also sort of ties up what's happening to each character and things like that, which is, you know, interesting as well. And it's Mozart, so it's, you can never have too much Mozart. So.
Well, we haven't had that much Mozart, but we've had a taste, just a bit of a Mozart smorgasbord here in the form of these insights into one of the greatest of all operas, Don Giovanni. And it's a production that the Florentine Opera has done and probably will do again before too long. And my guests have been William Florescu, who's the executive director of the Florentine Opera, and also Emily Fons, who has sung the part of Donna Elvira, the great warning voice throughout all these tales of would-be seduction. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us, Norman.
Great pleasure. I'm Norman Gilliland, and I hope you'll be listening for the next time for University of the Air.